The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Yesterday, as you've been hearing, the US President Donald Trump announced that tariffs on imported pharmaceuticals could reach as much as 250% after starting at a lower level. Trump also added, by the way, he plans to unveil fresh duties on foreign semiconductors. Now, to talk about this further, I'm joined by Gareth Sheridan, CEO of pharma company Nutriband. But first, Shona Murray, Europe correspondent for Euronews. Shona, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we thought, done and dusted and agreed 15% across the board, and that would likely apply to pharma. So who wasn't listening closely to their American counterparts?
Well, the EU, I mean, officials will still say this morning that the 15% rate, that's all inclusive and will include pharmaceuticals as soon as the Section 232 investigation is complete. That still applies as of today. So I know there was comments from Donald Trump overnight, but I spoke to EU officials today and over the last few days, and they are certain that this will be the case. And the EU and the US is due to publish a joint statement on that agreement. And they said that that is fairly far advanced. So that should be, you know, with us in the next few days.
But we know people are scared of Trump. Yeah. So will these officials have the nerve to put out something that apparently contradicts their president?
No, I mean, what they're saying at the moment, I mean, officially, I mean, on the record as well, and not just at briefings, but at press conferences, that the 15% applies. I think what they won't do is respond to what Donald Trump has said overnight around 250%, because I don't think he specifically talked about the EU there as well. And as far as the EU is concerned, that statement will emerge over the next few days. I mean, that's what they're saying right now as we speak, because this has only happened overnight, but we've been talking about this for weeks. Now, and even yesterday spoke very in depth to a lot of EU officials about this.
Now, the reaction of Europe was to suspend its retaliation program, which it had drawn up, and it was quite draconian from an American point of view, but that's been suspended. So America gets to dump anything it likes on Europe without tariff, and we pay 15% on everything going in, and that may or may not include pharma as the whole thing unfolds. But Ursula von der Leyen was hugely criticised in many quarters for, first of all, her attitude in Scotland, which seemed to be almost obeisant to Trump, and also for the deal that was struck, which was so one-sided, it wasn't keeping many European governments happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, that sort of supine approach to Donald Trump was one thing. And the EU has said that this is not a deal to celebrate, but it's the best possible deal, because the other option, which was to apply the tariffs, would be so destructive to the European economies. And remember, when those tariffs are drawn up, the ones in relation to the reciprocal tariffs from Trump, they added, came up to around over 90 billion euros. Then that was reduced to 75 billion euros because several member states, including Ireland and Germany and others, they lobby the European Commission to take things off the tariff lines, such as beers or spirits or wines or so on, and cars. So then the EU is weaker because the EU is divided. And then after that, you have a much broader issue, which is if you are engaging in a tariff war with the United States, you have a much deeper confrontation. And then there's huge concern about the United States approach then to Ukraine, for example, if you have this sort of belligerent relationship. And that's really what the EU is talking about. The bigger picture is European security. So therefore, the EU has given in to the 15% tariffs, which the EU will say this is a tax on American consumers and not the EU. And then also the EU, as we know, is committed to 750 billion euros of importation of US LNG and about 600 billion euro of spending on defence. But yes, indeed, nobody's happy with the deal, but they say it's the best possible option given the circumstances.
And given Ursula von der Leyen's being criticised also on her stance on Israel and Gaza, not being robust enough in criticising Israel, is her position secure, or is there any way in which she might be removed?
I don't think that she would be removed, but you're right. I mean, she already had this issue with the censure motion at the European Parliament just a few weeks ago. And that was in relation to her relationship with the CEO of Pfizer around COVID. So this was brought up by a sort of a far right MEP. But there is definite concern around the approach that she's taken to Gaza. Over the past few years, she's never criticised Israel. And as we know, that the European Commission has not been forthright in moving anything to respond to Israel for its breaches of the EU-Israel Association Agreement. So there's huge criticisms around that. But remember, Germany is the country that is supplying the most weapons from the Europeans' perspective. And Germany is one of the most powerful countries in the European Union. So it's not just under Ursula von der Leyen, it's also the member states.
And finally, Seán, I should ask you about what you're hearing, you know, off the record in the corridors of Brussels about the attitude to Trump. I mean, he does seem to be so mercurial, so off the wall in so many ways, gets things wrong, misstates things. And Ursula von der Leyen didn't even pipe up when he claimed that America was giving so much to Gaza and nobody else had done anything else, whereas the European Union had been actually very active in supporting the beleaguered people of Gaza. You know, what are people saying about Trump?
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. The EU is the largest donor for humanitarian aid and development in Palestine for 10 decades. Anyway, the feeling is brace yourselves for the next 4 years. Let's hope Donald Trump doesn't walk away from NATO, doesn't walk away from selling weapons to Ukraine. We know that the United States has completely decided not to give any weapons to Ukraine free, for example, like when under Joe Biden. It's literally just about trying to survive the next few years. I mean, nobody's even discussing some of the autocratic things we're seeing in the United States when it comes to ICE taking people up off the streets. That's something that the EU would normally talk about, but it's really just about how Europe and the European continent can survive Donald Trump. That's really what it is. Yeah. Everybody acknowledges.
We are, if you like, ignoring the principles that Europe is supposed to stand for. If it was another country and a smaller country, we'd be criticising it loudly, and yet we dare not criticise the great Donald.
That's exactly. Look, if you look at the NATO summit in The Hague earlier in July, we saw Secretary General Mark Rutte call Donald Trump daddy. And he didn't do that because he was being just completely supine. He's doing it because he has a job, which is to keep the United States in NATO for the next 4 years, to keep NATO together. And whatever it takes, whatever language you have to use, then that has to be used for Donald Trump to keep him on side because he is so mercurial and because the European continent is really in a very difficult position because of Russia. Because remember, the United States is being really soft on Putin. It has said that part of its long-term policy is to separate the relationship between Russia and China. And therefore, Ukraine is only a small part of that. The United States isn't even that interested in the war in Ukraine. It's more interested in rebooting or resetting its relationship with Russia. And that's a huge problem and vulnerability for Europe.
Seán Murray, Europe correspondent for Euronews, thank you very much for joining us. Now, Gareth Sheridan, the CEO of New Japan, listening to that conversation, and we want to talk with you, Gareth, about the threat to pharma. What do you make of Donald Trump's overnight declarations that you could have tariffs as high as 250%? And the way he said it, it was almost like the sky's the limit. It could be far higher than that even. You know, that was the tone of his voice.
Hey, Pat. Yeah, how are you doing? No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's, you know, another twist in the roller coaster of the pharmaceutical tariff discussions that we're facing. And it was almost said to your point, you know, in passing, you know, we were all taking a collective exhale at a 15% tariff rate on pharmaceuticals, which actually is still a significant rate. I think when we were facing rates of 200% as the main point of discussion for weeks on end, it was almost like a win when 15% was announced on pharmaceuticals. But, you know, ultimately, that is a significant increase, even at 15%, for people that are already on the brink of being able to afford their care. Mm. And this particularly affects American patients, which is why I find this just baffling, to be honest. You know, to give you some statistics here, 3 out of 5 people battling cancer in America today are on the edge of being able to not afford their chemotherapy. Now, they can't afford a 15% hike, let alone 150%, 250% hike, those sort of crazy numbers. That's about 2 million people who are going to be priced out of chemotherapy if 15% tariffs go ahead, and we know they're going ahead. So the problem here is that we won't see the fallout from a 15% tariff until people start to become statistics and numbers and data. And I think that's a really dangerous precedent. No, and I've been trying to hammer that home.
What do you make of Trump's contention some time back that exporting companies from Europe, and pharma would obviously be included in that, that they can eat the tariffs? In other words, they won't change their pricing. They'll just diminish their profits.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping will be the outcome on the 15%. They can't eat 150, 250%. And the problem is, you also can't, I know he said, okay, look, 150% will come in a year, year and a half, whatever the number was. That's still not enough time to up and move a plant from Europe, China, anywhere, back to the US, get it re-regulated, get the sales force in place, get the supply chain in place, get the manpower and personnel in place, and then get an FDA approval to actually manufacture the pharmaceuticals in that facility. So it's just these decisions need to be really pragmatically looked at. And I think this 150, 250% discussion was almost said in passing. Mm. And I think when it comes to pharmaceuticals, you're talking about people's lives at the end of the day, and these need to be very well thought out. I'm still trying to figure out how 15% now works into the system without disrupting patients' care at the end of the day, because ultimately pharmaceutical companies have a duty now to make sure that patients can still access their medications at the end of the day.
Now, the the analysis that was going on in America, and we haven't had the report yet, is about the strategic necessity for America to produce its own drugs and how dependent it is on the rest of the world for so many things. Do you have any sense of how dependent America is? What is it not making that it could make, and what is it missing that it cannot make at the moment?
Well, I think they're clearly more dependent than they're comfortable with, and I think that's a big driving force. And I actually, in a roundabout way, I understand the approach they're taking there, but I don't understand the approach of how to make it right again for them. I think the COVID scare was the real issue that faced America and their reliance on other countries for a situation like that. And I think that started the gears, you know, turning in terms of their reliance on other countries should something like that happen again. But, you know, there's ways to approach that in a specific manner where you don't lump pharmaceuticals as a whole into this sort of conversation when you're talking about, you know, antibiotics and chemotherapy treatments. I mean, ultimately, it's a far more complex structure and system than it is being treated. And I think that's where the problem is coming in. Again, a 15% hike that pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies you hope would absorb, it's not a certainty they will. So you're in this situation now where patients are actually now watching this unfold, wondering what the cost of their care is going to be. I see it all over social media. I see it in the news all the time. I see interviews happening where actual cancer patients are asking, am I going to be able to afford my treatment anymore? And that's just a dangerous position to be in. It took us 50 years to build our pharmaceutical industry. You know, that's not going to be reversed and, you know, shipped, you know, outside the borders of Ireland again in the space of a year, 2 years, or even 4 years. Now, so it just needs common sense.
You mentioned that they would, you know, if they had to build a new plant, it would take ages to build it. You'd have to find the trained personnel to run it, and you would have to get certification. But you're wondering how much certification will there be? Have a listen to this now, and I like your comment. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's the US Secretary of Health, has announced the cancellation of $500 million of funding for mRNA vaccines, which would counter flu and COVID and all the rest of it. And as you know only too well, this technology came to the fore in the fight against COVID, thanks to the efforts of Pfizer and Moderna. But this is what he said.
Most of these shots are for flu or COVID, but as the pandemic showed us, mRNA vaccines don't perform well against viruses that infect the upper respiratory tract. Here's the problem. mRNA only codes for a small part of the viral proteins, usually a single antigen. One mutation and the vaccine becomes ineffective. This dynamic drives a phenomenon called antigenic shift, meaning that the vaccine paradoxically encourages new mutations and can actually prolong pandemics as the virus constantly mutates to escape the protective effects of the vaccine. Millions of people, maybe even you or someone you know, caught the Omicron variant despite being vaccinated. That's because a single mutation can make mRNA vaccines ineffective. The same risk applies to flu. After reviewing the science and consulting top experts at NIH and FDA, HHS has determined that mRNA technology poses more risk than benefits for these respiratory viruses.
Tell that to the people who got a vaccine and it prevented their death as they watched maybe relatives who didn't get vaccinated fall prey to the COVID-19 infection. So what do you make of that, Gareth, that kind of attitude? You know, someone who might be in charge of certification, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., talking nonsense.
I think the problem is, Pat, you know, medicine hasn't ended, right? Medicine is constantly evolving the way mutations are constantly evolving, right? And this will be, you know, how treatments effectively are created, discovered.
Why we need a new flu vaccine every year with different components, exactly. Because the flu virus actually mutates naturally. This is what happens, and we combat it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Medicine and viruses are constantly evolving, right? And they're just there to constantly combat each other, right? We haven't finished developing medicine, right? The way he's trying to argue that we have hit some sort of cap with an mRNA vaccine and it will not be, useful against all the variations or mutations he's talking about. We'll have variations of vaccines that will combat those as well. It's a constant fight against one another, and that's how medicine and science works, right? I'm just a simple science guy that I follow the data and I follow the numbers, which would, you know, ultimately contradict, unfortunately, those statements.
You see, the whole thing is a contradiction, isn't it? You know, attacking academia, withdrawing funding for research, and then wanting to build up a massive pharma industry indigenous to the United States without the science backup. It's crazy.
Yeah, if it's a cost-saving measure, I think they're just targeting the wrong industry and the wrong people, because ultimately it's people's lives here. So, I mean, it's just, you need to just follow the science and be, one thing that I just constantly stress in these situations is don't be emotional about it. Just look at the data, look at the numbers and look at the figures, and also don't make people part of the data, part of the numbers and part of the figures. That's what has to be remembered here. And when we're talking about pulling funding for vaccines and we're talking about 250% tariffs, leave that to the cars, leave that to the motorbikes and the bread and the this and that. I mean, leave pharma out of it is ultimately my message, because ultimately it's people's lives, and people's lives are not statistics.
Gareth Sheridan, CEO of NutriBand. Gareth, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.